Whether you want to escape the snow or plan it, Arias Medical has you covered. Try a rewarding travel assignment during the holiday season with Arias Medical Group. Call Arias at 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariasmedical.com. That's AREUS medical.com.
This is the PT Pinecast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pinecast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right, you ready to rock and roll?
Sure.
All right, let's rock and roll. This is interview number 4 for the evening. The next episode of the PT Pinecast starts right now. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Want to thank all of our guests tonight and everybody else. We had a PT pub night at the World of Beers in Arlington for our very first birthday party, and we had, 70, 80 people show up for a first birthday party. Not often is a first birthday party in a bar. That's not usually where you do the first birthday party, maybe the 21st birthday party, but fantastic night. If you want to host your own PT Pub Night, check out their website online, just ptpubnight.com. So our final guest this evening is a practicing physical therapist, spent 7 years working as a PT in the amputee section at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Her darkly funny memoir of her time there, Run, Don't Walk, has been featured on C-SPAN Book TV, Fox News, and the Washington Post Book World. She also edited and produced the department newsletter, The Turnip, which I like the name of, known for such groundbreaking articles as restaurant reviews of the local eateries, fish in the hood, and suggestions that the new hospital uniform policy include choices of different superhero costumes. Why has this not been worldwide adapted? Her writing has appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Narratively, Psychology Today, and the Washingtonian. Up next on the PT Pinecast, Adele Levine. Adele, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You are our cleanup hitter tonight. We've done 4 interviews. You're number 4. So no pressure.
Okay, you must be exhausted.
I'll be completely honest. Andrew Guccione, who we just talked to, said, how do you keep going? And my response was, when I'm around people, coming from a radio background, yeah, when there's a bunch of people, especially in a bar, because I did spend a large majority of my radio career in a bar, because that's where a lot of the events are, I kind of feed off the energy. And then, but he said, the moment this is over, I'm like, oh, I crash. I completely crash. I'm gonna hit my bed and not wake up for 12 hours.
I think I heard that you have an exam tomorrow.
I've graduated.
Oh, you
I'm
done.
Done.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The second year students
out.
Have an exam tomorrow.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So we'll finger cross for them.
They're gonna need some help.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, here's what it was displayed to me from my patho professor. Was that alcohol kills brain cells, but only the strong survive. So you've made yourself smarter because you've only killed the weak ones. I hope that makes sense. I mean, I hope that's actually true, because if that is, it works. So we touch base online because of the book that you wrote, Run, Don't Walk. And I want to get into that, why you wrote it, how you came up with the idea of it's time to write a book. Any writing background before you became PT?
Yeah, I had been writing like humor articles for the Washington Post for a few years.
How did that begin?
I had this 17-year-old car that my friends called the Rustang. Yeah, because the doors were rusted shut, so the only way you could get in or out of my car was to climb through the window.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Yes, but I never mastered the slide across the hood technique. But
nobody mastered that.
Anyway, my friends felt like this was a very unsafe car for me to be driving. And
okay.
So they had this, and then they found out that I was also using a screwdriver to unlock my seatbelt.
Kidding me.
So they had this intervention one night where they all got together and they tried to convince me to get rid of my car.
The Rustang,
which I was never going to do.
Not a chance.
Like right after the intervention, like maybe like a week later, I'm like driving home, I'm like stuck in traffic, and like my car totally catches on fire.
That doesn't happen normally. That's not a normal thing for cars to do.
I mean, if it happens, you can open your door. But when you're in the Rustang, you know,
and you can't even
get out
of the seatbelt.
So I didn't know what to do. So I just did what I always do, which was I just kept driving my car.
Okay. That's also not a normal thing to do.
Yeah, so I was about a mile from my apartment, and I was just, like, determined to get it home.
Keep going.
Yeah, so I managed somehow to get it back to my apartment. I, like, fly into the parking lot. I jump out the window. And then I run up the stairs to my apartment, and I just kind of lay down on the couch.
Was your car still on fire?
Well, I was just smoking a lot.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fine.
So I just left it out there.
Yeah.
And then after that day, my car, like, never drove again.
Not a shock. Usually when it catches on fire.
And so I was, like, spending a lot of time at home. I was reading the Washington Post one night. And there was this article on local eyesores.
Okay.
And at the end of the article, they had this little query, like, do you know of a local eyesore? Like, if you do, like...
Let us know.
Let us know. And I thought, well, yeah.
I got one now.
Yeah, it's like parked out back.
It's just art sitting out there now. If it was on fire, it's not going to run.
Totally. It was just rusting away. So I just thought, well, I'll just write it up myself. So I wrote up this like 700-word article about my car, and I emailed it to the Washington Post editor, and like, anyway, he ended up calling me, and he like loved the article. He said if I ever had anything else I wanted to send him, just to go ahead and send it in. And then he added... Especially if it's about Metro.
The Metro?
Yeah, because I guess he figured I was taking the Metro
a lot. Oh, because you have no car. You got it,
yeah,
okay.
So then after that, like, whenever something funny would happen to me, I would write it up and I would send it to
the editor.
To the Post. And a lot of times they would run it, so.
So that was how you got into writing. Were you a PT at this point?
Oh, yeah. I was working at Walter Reed.
Okay.
And it was great because it became my outlet. It was kind of how I handled the pressure of my job.
Yeah. I'm similar in that way. Except that my outlet's more talking. It's more of this.
Yeah.
So I will write if forced to. Like, you can't pass this class unless you write a paper. But I like that. Is that your kind of creative outlet? And you found it kind of serendipitously through the Rustang.
Yeah, thank God.
So now you're a PT at Walter Reed, and you kind of have this ability to connect with people with words. And how does that make the jump to, hey, let's write a book about my experiences at where I work?
Well, so I was writing all these kind of like funny little humor articles about like getting trapped on a Metro train.
Right,
or
right.
Finding a bed in my apartment. And I was doing that for like 3 years. And I thought, I don't know, I got a lot of satisfaction out of it. It was kind of fun for me.
Sure, especially some, I mean, you're in the DC area.
Yeah.
It's pretty population dense.
Anyway, I was working on another article. I was at home and I was writing, and like my girlfriend at the time, she's like, you know, you're wasting your time writing those articles for the Post.
Why?
I know. I was like, what? I was so offended. And she was like, yeah. She's like, you know, they're cute and they're funny, but like,
jealous.
She's like, you're missing the big picture.
Okay.
She's,
so where did this
like,
go?
She's like, you should be writing about Walter Reed. She's like, you should be writing about your job. And I thought, you know, that's a crazy idea. You know, like the whole reason I was writing in the first place was to take my mind off my job.
Good point.
So like the last thing I was ever going to do when I came home from work would be to
write about work. Yeah. So then how'd you make that jump? When did you decide that maybe that wasn't such a crazy idea?
I mean, first I have to preface that things at Walter Reed, when I first started writing for the Post, you know, that was in 2007.
So describe what Walter Reed was like, because I think that's a name that comes up, especially in physical therapy or medical care for vets, and it's got some mixed emotions, because what was it like then when you were there?
Well, I started at Walter Reed in 2005, and then I was transferred into the amputee section in 2007, which was right when the surge in Iraq happened. And in the beginning, we were mostly seeing like single-leg amputees and patients who had lost a leg or had lost legs below their knees. But as the wars went on, the injuries began to get worse and worse. And so we began to see more and more double amputees.
Wow.
We began to see the amputations kind of move up the body. So they went from being below the knee and below the elbow to above the knee. We began to see patients losing their arms, you know, at the arm and then the armpit. We began to see patients losing their legs at the hip.
Why was that changing? Just different warfare? I mean, you'd know firsthand because you were there changing.
Well, two reasons. I think the medical care became that much better, so we were able to save patients who otherwise would not have been saved.
Okay.
I also think that the bombs got deadlier, so the insurgents became better at what they were doing.
So both sides are getting better at what they do.
Yeah, and then when we went into Afghanistan, most of our patients were dismounted, so they were walking across it. So by 2011, I would say almost all the patients coming in on the medevacs were triple amputees.
Oh my God.
And we had rehabilitated three men who had lost all four of their limbs. So, I mean, like the severity of the injuries just ramped up so much, and it happened so quickly. And the only way, like, I knew how to kind of handle it was to write these like funny articles at night.
We've talked more about this on the show. Is you take some of that home with you. I mean, you were talking about why you were writing, and you were writing some funny stuff in the Post,
yeah,
to get a release. But if you don't release that and you're dealing with things like that, that's going to catch up with you. So it's good that you had at least that outlet. And I hope people in that similar situation have an outlet. It doesn't matter really what it is, as long as it helps you.
Yeah. Well, all of my coworkers who made it through those years at Walter Reed, they all had something that they did.
That's important.
Yeah.
So, recognize that you need that.
Yeah. And I also think as a physical therapist, when you're working with a population that's never going to get 100% better, you need to have something that you're doing that you're actually kind of finishing or completing. At least for me, no one's going to grow their legs back, you know. At least maybe I can, like, tile my kitchen or finish an article.
So now you're experiencing this and things are ramping up. And then how do you make the jump from working to, hey, let's write a book about my time here?
Well, I mean, it was kind of suggested to me
by
a few different people.
Okay.
You know, when we were working in Walter Reed, we worked, first of all, we were seeing at our peak between, I would say, anywhere between 150 and 180 amputees a day. We were rehabilitating them. And
out of how many PTs?
We had 10.
Wow.
So
that's a full schedule.
But not everybody was coming in. So our census, I think, at our peak was 180, but we maybe saw like 150.
That's still a lot.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we worked really long hours. But we did all of our rehab in this Glaston rehab clinic, which was glassed in because they used to lead tour groups around the perimeter. And so, like, you're always kind of looking up at someone looking in at you.
Like a fish tank.
Yes. And so, like, you know, we always used to joke, like, the patients and the staff, like, oh, this is, you know, how it feels to be an animal at the zoo. That weird feeling of being in, like, this fishbowl.
Yeah.
That's kind of what gave me the idea to kind of write the book, because I just started feeling like, it started feeling like a really dark comedy to me, because the tour groups always look kind of horrified. But on our side of the glass, we were always sort of joking and laughing. And a lot of that was led by the patients. You know, they would...
Which is good.
Yeah. No, they were awesome. They would, like, tease each other mercilessly. They would call each other names, you know, like Ugly Stump or Princess if someone was having a lot of pain. They would always make fun of the below-knee amputees. They would call them paper cuts. And they would wear t-shirts that said things like, I had a blast in Afghanistan. And,
you're kidding me.
No, Marine, 50% off. I mean, it was really like dark, dark humor.
But that's the way to get through things like that. If you're not going to, I mean, literally, if you lose the sense of humor, I hope that's the last thing that goes with me whenever I go.
Yeah, you need to have a good funny bone to be a physical
therapist.
Keep
that around, yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys were looking at this glass fishbowl, and you're looking at the people who are on the other side of it, and what did they expect to see? And they're looking in horrified, but you're touring a rehab hospital. What did you expect to see?
I know, but it was kind of like, it would kind of put you in check, because we'd be like, I mean, the patients were making fun of each other, but like the staff, we were just as bad. Like, it was just total chaos in
but
there.
That's the way you melt. That's the way you work well with the patients. Yeah. You guys have the same vibe, the same sense of humor.
Yeah. So it was just a nonstop comedy hour in there. And so I just kind of wanted to capture that feeling, because I just thought, this is just so outrageous, you know.
Describe to somebody what it felt like during your time there. What was it like?
Oh, and I never talked about my job. It was
previously or now?
Previously, because it was just like, I didn't even know where to begin. And like,
that's a hard thing to encapsulate in one quick blurb to someone over a drink.
I just feel like people didn't really want, I don't know, maybe I felt uncomfortable about it, but it wasn't something that, I mean, I rarely went out too. That's probably another, but it's not politically correct.
Why? What do you mean? It's not politically correct to tell people what was going on or to bring that up or?
Well, I think like maybe now people are more interested in what's been going on, but this was like 2007, 2010.
You mean people might have not wanted to hear about it because it would make it more real or?
I feel like America likes to look back on things fondly, but like when things are happening, like people like to look the other way.
Yeah.
So.
If someone were to bump into you tonight, if a PT student, because your book was suggested multiple times by multiple professors throughout my education at Marymount University, how would you describe what your story was? What was the feel of the book like? Why did Why'd you write it?
Just want to kind of capture the spirit of what it was like to be there. You know, I just thought it was such an unusual place.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, I kept waiting for someone else to write a book about Walter Reed, and then nobody did. But then the more I thought about it, I felt like it would be better coming from someone on the inside who actually would capture it as kind of a happy place and not a depressing place.
On the inside of that fish tank, instead of someone else just touring there, writing a book and walking away, you were really there on the ground.
Because even though it seemed like it would be depressing to be there, it wasn't. And like our colonel even used to call the amputee clinic kind of the happy place because we kind of celebrated life in there. You know, we were all about birthday cakes and celebrating someone's alive day. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So let's go into some moments. Are there moments that come to mind when someone says, like, tell me about a good day or, you know, a good interaction, one that you hold fondly? What are some of those?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it was so insane over there. Well, we had really unusual visitors come.
Okay, who?
Well, a lot of celebrities would come by, of course.
All right, now we're getting into it. Yeah, who came by?
We saw, like, everybody, like Angelina Jolie. We saw President Bush, President Obama. But my favorite, Stevie Nicks, we accidentally locked her in the clinic. We turned the lights out on her.
How did you do that?
She was still in there. She was drawing this angel. I don't know. She's kind of
Stevie Nicks. She's a little
crazy,
out there. Yeah. She's not.
She's nice. But my favorite visitors were like just random people who would show up, who just decided they needed to come to Walter Reed and do something nice for the soldiers. So one day I was at, we were working, and you know, we work in this glassed-in like fishbowl. Here comes this couple like coming down the hallway toward us, and they're pushing like this antique baby carriage, and like they come down the hallway and they come right into the clinic, and as soon as they get into the clinic, they whip the top back on the carriage and they pull this blanket back, and there's 8 little puppies in there.
Yes.
And so they had snuck like these little puppies in like past the guards at the front gate, like, and they weren't military or anything. They're like, we just decided. They were like a young couple.
Just wanted to bring some dogs.
Yeah.
So there you go.
It was very believable that they might have a baby in there, except they had this old antique carriage. But
that
I thought
awesome.
That was great. And then they stayed like for most of the afternoon.
Just playing with puppies.
Yeah. And then like maybe a couple weeks later, they tried to sneak the puppies back, but they got busted.
So what are we driving now? Now that the Rustang is done.
I am driving an even worse car.
You're
kidding me. I cannot
believe
it.
You're kidding
me.
So
no, it's actually the doors open, but it's my dad's car. My dad died a few years ago, and my mom, I always gave him a hard time about his old crappy car, and like I had bought like a newer car, you know, so I was really pleased with myself. But when my dad died, my mom said it depressed her to see his old car out there.
So you said, you know what, I'm going to take it around.
Yep, I sold mine, and now I'm driving my dad's like 18-year-old car.
What are we into now? You've written the book. How was it received by the coworkers?
They liked it. They really liked it. Actually, before I turned the manuscript in, like I had my coworkers read it. I ran it up my chain of command. I had my supervisors read it. Like I really wanted to, like I didn't want to write anything that people would not like, you know? So they were surprisingly all pretty like happy about it. I mean,
good.
I'm sure maybe there's someone who's not, but I did like run it past all of them and kind of get their approval.
But you told the story from one person's perspective.
Yes.
And you told it as true as you could.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, you know, from my perspective, and I don't want to represent anyone else's view.
What are we up to now?
I thought after I wrote the book, like, I'm going to be like a writer now, you know?
Right.
That lasted like 1 month. I just really like being a physical therapist, so.
That's a pretty cool thing to be, though.
Yeah, so since like I have my transportation issues, I have a very small radius where I can work, so within biking distance of my house. So I work for 2 different hospitals. I do PRN work.
Okay. In what population? Who are you working
just
with?
Just inpatient.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never really done inpatient before. I'm like the big dummy at work, but everyone's been real patient with me.
What have you taken away from your writing about your experience at Walter Reed that you still kind of carry with you today? Is there something that you still kind of are able to apply to your patients now?
I mean, I'm glad I wrote the book, but my first thought, like when I finished writing it, was like, I can finally go back to writing about stuff I like to write about.
For the turnip.
Like, not that I didn't like writing about work, but it was really hard to write about Walter Reed. So.
Why? Because it was so personal?
Because yeah, it was personal. It was a difficult time. Like, when you're still sort of so close to it. Like, for me, it's a lot easier to write about stuff. I'm, like, really good at writing, like, a 750-word article, you know? Like,
a book's just a big deal. A book is a monumental undertaking.
Yeah, that was, like, not something I'd want to repeat right away. It's just very, it was, I bit off more than I could chew. I'm really glad it's out there, so.
You can check that out, Rundell Walk, featured again on C-SPAN, Book TV, Fox News, and the Washington Post Book Review. Suggested multiple times through my education at Marymount through different professors. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to do three questions with Adele, and we're going to talk what she can apply this or what other people can apply this to their practice as physical therapists. So we'll be right back on the PT Pinecast. Don't move.
The PT Pinecast. We stand for life, liberty, and beer. Plus, you know, physical therapy and stuff.
Considering a travel assignment over the holidays, or ready to escape the cold weather for some winter sunshine? Arias Medical Group is the leading healthcare staffing agency, offering travel and full-time career opportunities for PTs nationwide. Call Arias at 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's AUREUSmedical.com.
Working out his orbicularis oris until failure. DJ, please. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pinecast.
And we're back on the PT Pinecast at the World of Beers for our 1 year, and I almost said 1 year anniversary. It's our first birthday party. Let's pitch it that way. We had a cookie cake, and we had a lot of things taken care of. Here with Adele Levine at World of Beers in Arlington. Going to do three questions. Are you ready for three questions?
Sure.
All right. This is first question is for our sponsor. It's RAS Medical Staffing. If you could work anywhere in the U.S., where would you work?
Oh, Hawaii.
Yeah. I mean, why not?
How many people have said that? I mean, probably everyone, huh?
I'm going to keep that quiet because when I eventually want to go to Hawaii, I want to be able to get a job
there. I
want to
work in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Second question. What's the last thing that you read and really enjoyed? Can be PT or non-PT related.
Oh, I read When Breath Becomes Air.
Okay, what's that about?
Oh, my God. It was totally tragic. It's not the kind of thing I normally read, but it was by this neurosurgeon who died of lung cancer at the age of 36.
Oh, my God.
He wrote, like, a few articles in the New York Times that I read about, like, kind of dealing with terminal illness as a young person, and Again, it's not the kind of book I would normally read, but I thought it was so profound.
Yeah.
It's like one of those books that kind of changes your outlook on life. And I feel like there's so few.
Those are the best kinds.
I mean, it really blew me away. And there's like so little, like there's so much out there on like different stages of life. Like I'm a parent and there are all these parenting books out there. There are all these books on sleep and potty training. And there's tons of books about raising teenagers, but there's really nothing out there about
two boys, right?
Yes.
How's that going? You want to say hello? Are they going to listen?
What?
Are they going to listen when mom's on a podcast?
Oh,
or
no.
What?
They would turn me off. I'm not even allowed to sing around them.
Oh, they're so mean to you. Third question on three questions is, who's somebody in the physical therapy field that is flying under the radar that more people should know about?
Oh, I just have so many funny coworkers.
Lay it on us. Yeah. Who's that?
Well, I don't want to say names, but every now and then I have a coworker who just like freaks out. And she's like, this is the stupidest job ever. She just goes on and on.
But there are moments like that in physical therapy.
There are.
You're like, not going to say who it is?
No. I don't want to embarrass her, but I admire her greatly.
All right. Well, you got to give us a name for someone else, though. So who's somebody who's flying under the radar in physical therapy that we should pay attention to more?
Kyla Dunleavy at Walter Reed.
Okay.
She is.
Why?
Fantastic. She's
good.
Like one of the smartest people I've ever met.
Cool. How are you still applying, or are you still applying, I should ask, the lessons that you learned from working at Walter Reed and then eventually writing the book about it to patient care today? You're still in PT?
Yes. I love being a PT. I just try not to take myself too seriously. I like to keep things light. Oh, and I think that
patients appreciate that.
Yeah, but I also think like the big thing I learned at Walter Reed was like you kind of have to let the patient guide you and not you telling them what their goals are and what they're going to do. Like I just try to see, and I know this is terrible to say, but I just try to see myself as like a resource or an assistant. But again, like I worked with a population that just didn't have a lot of control with what was going on at the moment. In the inpatient setting, it's very similar. You know, people are very sick. So I think if I can let them think that getting out of bed is their idea, not my idea, like, you know, they're much more receptive to it.
That's a good way to pitch it, because we've talked multiple times in this episode. It should be about the patient. If it's not, it's not your day at work. It's your day working with them.
Yes.
And they're in charge. They're the boss.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you get better results that way, too.
Well, I just try not to. I mean, I just try to be accommodating and not take things personally.
Because typically when you're working with patients like that, it's a difficult time in their life.
Oh,
and you
totally.
Got to respect that.
Yeah. I always wonder, you know, like, how would I be if I was a patient? Like, would I be a good patient or would I be a bad patient?
We often say that physical therapists, and I've heard this before, were the worst patients when it actually comes time to actually have care taken to us.
Oh, I'm sure. So.
All right. So every episode is a pint. But before we're done with pints, we do shots.
Okay.
So parting shot of wisdom. If you were going to give some advice to someone who's going to work with a similar population, say you're going to have someone who has just become a physical therapist a couple weeks ago like me, who was going to go into an amputee unit and work with the same population that you were working with when you were writing the book, what kind of advice would you give them? What would you tell them to remember?
Drink a pot of coffee.
Why? Because they're going to have so much more energy than you, or...
Oh, I don't know.
It's a long day.
It was a long day. And we would get to work at 6 in the morning. I mean, I just keep it simple. Yeah. So keep it simple. And don't take yourself so seriously, for God's sakes.
And I think we forget that sometimes, because we go through all this school and all this work, and then it's time to put everything into practice.
Well, I think you should just look for the number one impairment that you see. Like, I wouldn't go, like, crazy looking for, like, 10 different things. Just look at the most obvious problem and just address that one thing, and then you will be sure to do something that actually helps. So
just try to do one thing each interaction.
In the amputee population, I think so much of their gait deviations were based on strength deficits. So, like, you know, if you're going to be spinning all over the place looking at, like, length, then, like,
yeah, you're not going to get anything done.
So, yeah, so just keep it simple.
I like it.
Yeah.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
That's the best advice to give for anybody heading into any profession, especially some profession like PT, which is often be so complex.
Well, what I love is reading, like, the surgeon's notes at work, which are seriously like 4 sentences long. This is from, like, the orthopedic surgeon. This is someone who's just, like, you know, put in, like, a new knee in somebody, you know? They spent 3 hours hammering a new knee in, and then their note is, like, 4 sentences. Yeah, and then the physical therapist who follows the next note, which is from the physical therapist, just detailing how they got the patient into a chair, is, like, 4 pages long.
Wow.
Like, why are we doing that to ourselves?
So keep it simple.
Yes.
Run, don't walk, and you can check that out. It's been featured on C-SPAN Book TV, Fox News, and the Washington Post Book World. I want to say thank you for coming out and sharing some of your knowledge. I really want to say thank you for writing the book. I think that it can teach us to do what you just said, which is, number one, keep it light and keep it simple.
Well, thank you, and thanks for reading it.
You just blushed a little bit on the podcast. I just want to point that out to people. And I want to thank you for coming out and spending some time with us, especially on a milestone occasion such as this, which is we've been doing this for a year, didn't think this thing would go anywhere, and we did exactly kind of similar to what you did, which was I use this as kind of therapeutic, which was I'm just going to talk a bunch, and then I'm going to listen a bunch, and hopefully I learn a little bit. And I did it when I was, you know, a PT student, started it when I was a PT student, and it helped me get through the rest of PT school. So I think trying to find alternative outlets to kind of relieve some stress or gain some knowledge is a good way to go about it.
It's admirable what you've done, really.
Thank you very much. Well, appreciate it. Adele Levine, everybody, run, don't walk on the PT Pintcast. Thanks for taking some time out for us.
Oh, thanks.
Follow us on Twitter at PT Pintcast and online at ptpintcast.com. It's like TMZ, except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all. The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.